Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of At the Movies with William Fletcher. As per usual, I am your host, William Fletcher, and I am joined this week by Harry Jobson.
I'm present. Yes, sir.
I just want to say up front, my throat has been, I've been sick the past week, basically. So my throat, my voice might sound a bit different. So if that's why, if my audio sounds like different or whatever, that's why. Yeah, so, and yeah, there's, we haven't had time to record, so that's why it's been a couple of weeks. But anyway, we are looking at The Incredibles and Incredibles 2. This was Harry's choice, actually. Harry, I asked Harry what he would like to cover on the show at some point. Harry, you wanted to talk about sort of more picks, you wanted to talk about some Pixar films specifically. Yeah, you sort of mentioned films that sort of had sequels that were like
I feel like there's a weird genre of Pixar films that are the same, that all fall under a similar umbrella of having sequels that didn't come, like legacy sequels that didn't come out until like into a decade after. Monsters University came out not recently after Monsters, Inc., but late enough where it's... But you've got The Incredibles.
12 years.
Finding Dory is one as well, like Finding Nemo. But I remember The Incredibles being one of my favorite films, like growing up. And I was so excited, I remember, when Incredibles 2 came out. I just thought, as well, plus it worked really well with them showing the film locally at the cinemas. So being able to see The Incredibles at the cinema, it worked really well with sort of the idea I had about follow-up sequels. But The Incredibles 2 is interesting, and sort of like the way they build off The Incredibles world. But it is a superhero film. You know how I feel about The Incredibles.
Before we get into The Incredibles specifically, Pixar always, for the longest time, they seemed very finicky when choosing like sequels they made. They sort of, if you look at sort of, I would consider the golden era of Pixar was from Toy Story to Toy Story 3. That's sort of the peak of that. And you look at those films, and the only sequels in that era are Toy Story sequels. You've got Toy Stories 2 and 3, and that's it. From 1995 to 2010, you only get those two sequels, and everything else is like an original idea, because we've got A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, Incredibles, Cars, Ratatouille, Wall-E, and Up. And it's a truly incredible run of films from the studio. And then you look at their run sort of post Toy Story 3, and you've got Cars 2, Monsters University, like Finding Dory. They're making all these sequels finally after all these years, you know. And for the most part, these sequels don't live up to the original films in any way. Like Monsters University, vastly weaker than Monsters, Inc. Finding Dory, not really like that amazing. But The Incredibles, there was a re-release in the cinema recently, and so Harry and I, we went to the cinema together to go see it, because I haven't been to the cinema that recently, but it was interesting, because The Incredibles is sort of a film I've seen a lot, you know. It was a film I watched as a kid, and so we went in, and there was the traditional Pixar short film which played beforehand, which I don't believe you had seen. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing that before. I don't know if you'd seen it.
No, I hadn't seen it before.
Yeah. And then we sat down and we watched it, and it was fucking great. It's a
great film.
I mean,
it's great film.
Just the moment when the title card comes up and like the music starts playing, it's just like, It's first of all, to get into the film, I think the score is fantastic. That moment when just sort of the main theme plays, it's like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it just like, it makes you feel things.
Yeah, you know? Not just that, even though it's so triumphant. Like, it is such like a, it feels pure. It feels like a pure sound for something superhero related. And not just that, but it's all like a call to action. But not even the intro of the film, where they're doing the interview style, This is back when Pixar was so creative. That's such a creative way to start an animated film about superheroes. And it's so iconic. I have a really deep love for this film, especially with all the superhero saturation you get nowadays with multiverse expanding storylines and having to watch every piece of content related to it. And if you're out of the loop, you lose a big key factor and it's the universe is on the line. Sometimes it's just better if you have a pretty basic villain with a pretty basic backstory and a pretty basic goal.
Yeah, I think to sort of, after we saw the film, I believe you said something where I believe it's
the
you
greatest
said
greatest superhero it, film I've ever watched.
The greatest superhero. And that, those are some big words because, like, I don't agree. I think there's a few superhero films I would personally take over The Incredibles. I think Incredibles would be up there for me, though. I think Incredibles is like a really great film, but I personally would take at least two Spider-Man films over it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think The Incredibles is a great film. I think it's like amongst the best of Pixar. There's other superhero films that I personally find that I get sort of more out of. But yeah, I think Incredibles is, but to talk more specifically about The Incredibles, I think, yeah, it's a pretty great film. I think it's my third favorite Pixar, no, fourth favorite Pixar film, actually. I think it is a remarkably strong film. I don't really think there's a lot wrong with it other than it doesn't quite hit like perfection. Like, it's great, but it's not quite the masterpiece that other Pixar films are for me personally. But I mean, yeah, to talk about it, the animation, that's the thing I noticed rewatching the film in the cinema, is how well the animation holds up 20 years later. Yeah,
absolutely.
As much as I love, you know, stuff like Toy Story, the animation doesn't hold up as well. The Incredibles, watching it in a cinema, I really was like, huh, that animation looks pretty great for, you know, something that's 20 years old. And I thought, like, maybe it would have looked a bit odd because it's, like, 20 years old and there's been such advancements in CGI animation. But, like, watching it, it's like, oh, no, this could be released, like, today, and it would still be as good. And that's something that's interesting about Incredibles 2 is the animation, like, is, you know, 14 years. It's 14 years later, but it doesn't look as good. I don't know, something about the animation in Incredibles 2 looks kind of off. I don't, like, we'll get on to Incredibles 2 later, but it doesn't look quite right, and I don't know why that is.
The first Incredibles film, I think, yeah, not only does the animation hold up, the cast, the voice acting done by like a lot of the core cast here is awesome. That's like, it is really well done. I think that and they're really well sort of
I think the voice actress for Violet, yeah, that one doesn't quite work because it's like, if they'd gotten like sort of a teenage girl to do it, it would have worked a lot better. Like, they got a kid to voice Dash. You know, I think that would have, but they did get like a 30-something-year-old woman. And yeah, it just Sarah doesn't Val. Sound right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it doesn't work nearly as well. But I mean, yeah, the voice cast across the board are very.
How good is Jason Lee's Syndrome?
Yeah, I remember.
I geeked out about that in the cinema. I completely didn't realize it until recently. Because they do have some big names to this. You've got Craig T. Nelson, Samuel L. Jackson, Jason Lee, which are quite, especially at the time, were quite big actors. I think Brad Bird as Edna Mode is a stroke of genius as well. But
yeah, I mean, I think overall the voice cast is very good because you've got Craig T. Nelson and he's not got like. Because he's not really, like, because a lot of these actors aren't really voice actors. They're sort of just, like, regular actors. But I think, which is, I think, a problem now with animation is they sort of go a bit too hard in getting just like big celebrity voices instead of like voice actors or voices that, you know, I mean, Chris Pratt is in however many animated films, you know, you know, but with Pixar, they're very good about getting actors who aren't necessarily voice actors, but their voices fit those parts. Like they got Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. They work very well for Toy Story, for example. And I think, yeah, the voice cast, yeah, works really well here. I mean, the highlight for me was Samuel L. Jackson, because he's always a highlight in just sort of every film he's in, basically. Yeah, it's like genuinely just great voice acting across the board, basically. And I think the overall look and design of the film, there's like a really great stylistic sort of edge to it. It's very stylized.
Whereas this one is the first time that the animation actually looks, while being wholly focused on humans, but like the characters, I think the exaggerations that they have is really, really like well executed.
Yeah, they seem to really like figure out like, oh, this is how you animate people. You know,
they're quite sharp.
Make them look, and look like, you know, whereas, because, you know, there had been human characters, as you mentioned, human characters had appeared in those other films, but they just looked, they didn't look right. They looked like dolls or something. They looked very...
They looked uncanny.
Almost like the Robert Zemeckis era of, like, Polar Express, you know, like...
There were two... Uncanny. There were two, I think, trying to go for something that looked too real back then. And again, it would end up, because of the animation, that would look doll-ish. But you take in, like, again, for example, like, the each shape, even though they're all in the same family, the shape of each character is so drastically different that you can, like, you can pick them up, obviously, just by their silhouette. Like, Bob is literally just, like, rectangle head, big triangle body. Or Syndrome, for example. Syndrome has this weird teardrop-shaped head with a massive chin. Where it's like no human would look like that. But it's the exaggeration that creates into him being sort of like to our modern-day incel gamer nerd. Yeah, I love having that as the villain. It doesn't have to be this like world-threatening villain. It just has to be a smart kid with a grudge. But the film also deals with some really heavy stuff. Like, they don't get into the fact that Bob sees all of his mates die and he hides behind one of his, like, dead friend's body. The fact that they're suppressed people because of their difference. The fact that, like...
The allegories are very fucking apparent. It's like, oh, I wonder what this is referring to. And I appreciate it when animation doesn't talk down it is like, no, we're gonna address these kinds of things, because it's very, very like,
this is far from a kid's film.
It's this like can be enjoyed by this isn't squarely like, whereas something like, I think, like Toy Story or Finding Nemo or Bug's Life, those are sort of more squarely like, oh, these are kids' films, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think they're good; they're very good.
But this tells a very adult story.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's some really, there's even some sort of adult sort of innuendos in there as well. Of like, there's the there's sort of that montage Bob has where his wife, where Elastigirl keeps pulling him back into the house, presumably for sex or something. Like, it's a very...
And this is when Pixar, I think, entered their prime. I don't think they came in smashing off the gate. I do think the Toy Story films are great. And I also think that A Bug's Life and Finding Nemo are considered, like, prime Pixar films. But The Incredibles was
Inc. as well.
And Monsters, Inc. as well. I think this is a really good representation of their prime. I think Monsters, Inc. or Finding Nemo is when they really started to come into it. Yeah, I don't know, it hits all the beats. I think that, the stories they tell, but also it's a really nice family film. It's something that I think we miss so much nowadays. I can't remember the last time a film that I would say was this caliber or like this came out. About the family being able to see it being or going on to be considered a classic as well.
Because I think
this being like my something my dad loves, but also something that I love, and then that my kids are going to love, no matter, even though this film could span three generations without anyone thinking, oh, why am I watching this kid's film?
Yeah, no, for a recent example, the Super Mario Brothers movie, I enjoyed it, but it is sort of insular, but it's you don't really get picked. Like, as much as I think Pixar's great, a lot of the time now, sort of recently, they don't quite, like, the films they make don't really work as well. Like, they sort of do feel a bit like, oh, this is a kid's film. They don't sort of, they're not generational. You know, I think sort of in this sort of 2000s from, like, Incredibles. Cars is sort of an outlier. Cars is sort of, I think, very, very firmly for kids. But, I mean, you look at Incredibles, Ratatouille, Wall-E, Up, Toy Story 3. You're like, those are all, like, kids can enjoy these, but those are family films, you know? And I think that... I think that sort of animation is sort of in a weird place now, because it's, you sort of don't get film, like, every now and again there'll be an animated film that comes out and is just spectacular. Like, you know, I talk about it all the time, but Puss in Boots 2, like that is incredible. But, you know, you sort of look at other animation and they're always limited, you know, like recently there was the new Beavis and Butthead film, which I really loved, but that is, like, again, it's more insular in its audience. There was the Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio, which, again, I really, really loved, but is very insular for its audience. You know, that's not like a family film. That's sort of a bit more of a...
Well, I think it's such a piece of its time as well, but I don't have anything negative to say about this film specifically. I don't think that there's anything that I find they do wrong at all. There are a few bits, because when you do think about it, like, a bit deeper, you go, oh, a lot of people in this film are just ready to kill children. Like, I know they're villains, but in the one of the, towards the beginning of the film, when Bon Voyage, which is a hilariously camp, he literally puts a bomb on the child.
He's literally like, yeah, I'm going to kill this child. Like, he's, and it's like, he's just like, that's just an evil villain. And I'm like, and I mean, that opening sort of section where we see, which I think is a great sort of opening few minutes. I don't like where, he saves the guy from, like, jumping to his death, and then he gets sued for it. And I'm like, that's good. And then he has to, like, stop the train, and it's like, and I know it, and I was like, huh, there were two films, really, there are two superhero films released in 2004 where the main hero has to stop a train from falling off a bridge. But the action sequences, like when they go to the forest, like sort of on the island towards the end of the film, like it's something really kinetic, like the stuff where Dash is running, where, like, they're running from the ships and everything, and Dash, like, he runs across the water and everything.
Oh,
and, like,
when he runs across the water, that is beautiful.
It's something about water in animation just looks so nice, like, the, because with animation you can just kind of create what you want.
But the way, you know, that, so you, the way create... it breaks down with him, like, you can hear the impact of the water in the, like, well, whereas, like, when he's running across the jungle floor, we're going to say jungle, rainforest, but when he's running through the island, it's very, like, mulchy and the score, but when, like, it cuts out for the really high-pitched ting, 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 ting as he's on the water, and then it comes back into the score, and I'm like, oh, my God, I love that scene more than... anything.
Yeah, I think this film, it really does a great... Another thing I noticed watching it in a cinema is, like, the sound design. Like, there's so many, like, just the way, so, like, sort of the sort of general aesthetic of the film, really, it really sort of creates something unique. Like the sound design, like when the ships, like, they just sort of make, like, these whirring noises they're making. and like the, it's just so like the sound design, you like the cinema is like the best way to watch films, let's just be honest.
Yeah,
but even then, just sort of the visual design, like there's so many unique but sort of iconic designs, like the Omni Droid, for example. That's like a great design there, you know. Just, I mean, even the logo, like the Incredibles logo, it's very simple, but it is iconic. You know, like the film is.
Yeah, it's an film. Eye.
It's just an eye, but it you see that and you're immediately like, oh, that's the Incredibles.
What'd you give and the first film?
I give the first film a 9 out of 10. I think it's just a remarkably strong film. Every scene basically works. There's so many great moments throughout the runtime. It's like I could go on for so long about how great the film is. I just sort of want a couple quick things I want to touch on. I think that the third act when they're fighting the Omni Droid is phenomenally well crafted, just the way that the film sort of builds to that, and we see all these powers, all these moments, everything comes together, you know, really nicely in that final act, I think is great. And then the stuff with Syndrome at the end, I will say, it does feel a bit tacked on. I'm sure that was always the plan, but it's
how
like,
he dies.
Well, sort of that final scene, because it's like the
it's an afterthought. It feels like the film had finished and that they had chosen to, like, they were like, oh, well, we didn't really finish off Syndrome.
But yeah, I think it's a great film. I give it, 9 out of 10. Top tier Pixar.
Ring the bell. Ring the bell. Ring a ding ding. Extra, extra. Read all about it. This film is a 10 out of 10. I love this film. Well, it is my second favorite Pixar film. I will say that. No spoilers as to what's number one. But this film, I think I could watch this film rain, hail, or shine. The universe is such a, I'm struggling to get the words now, I'm actually speechless, but I do find that the film does a really great job in just telling its story. The animation, the sound design, I think again the very end gets a bit choppy, and there are bits, for example, there's a lot of people getting blended up in this film. A lot of people get stuck in jet. Like, and I love that it's a callback to Edna's Nookips, because it's funny. From the big story beats to the little bits, such as, like, as a kid, my favorite joke in the whole film was Edna Maud and guest. And because it was, like, very visual. Now it's still Edna. It's still, my God, you've gotten fat. Okay, come in. Like, each character, each interaction has a moment for everyone. And yeah, no, I just don't see myself getting... I don't see myself, like, ever not liking The Incredibles. I think The Incredibles is Pixar's best film, but The Monsters, Inc. is my favorite. But I think The Incredibles is the best we will ever see of Pixar.
I mean, yeah, no, fair enough. So I just want to touch on, as I always touch on, the Oscars. This film was nominated for 4 Oscars, which is just crazy that an animated film would get nominated for like more than one Oscar. Nowadays, yeah. Animated film. So it was nominated for it. Well, it won Best Animated Feature, beating Shrek 2 and Shark Tale. I think fair enough. It's the best of those 3 films there. It was also nominated for Best Original Screenplay, which is very interesting. Because a lot of Pixar films got nominated for original screenplay. Like Toy Story did. And the film was also nominated for sound editing and sound mixing, which it won sound editing. But yeah, anyway, then 14 years passed and people were clamoring for an Incredibles 2. Like, for the longest time, people were like,
I dreamed of getting Incredibles 2.
And I was like,
is it end the movie on a cliffhanger? Not really. It felt like
they
it.
They
teed up a second film.
Yeah, they sort of. And then, they announced that they were making a sequel But it took them for so many years to be like, to confirm that, yeah, we're doing this. Because Brad Bird, he went off, he made Ratatouille, which is great. He did Mission Impossible 4, and then he did Tomorrowland. Well, it was announced in 2014 in a shareholder meeting that Bob Iger said, oh yeah, we're working on Incredibles 4, and Brad Bird started writing a script for it in 2015. So it took them about 4 years or so to make it, which isn't too bad. There were some sort of complications with the film, from my understanding. They basically released they initially planned to release the film on June 21st, 2019, but because they were ahead in terms of like making the film was pulled up to June 5th, 2018. So they lost an entire year, basically, of production.
Yeah.
They could have had. And maybe losing that year of production
is the reason the film feels rushed.
Doesn't work as well. Yeah. I don't, to make it clear, I don't dislike the film. I think on the whole, it is a good film. But this is what we waited 14 years for.
Yeah, when you put it in that context, like, it's way more forgettable. The whole film is just, hey, do you want to see the same film again, but with the roles reversed? And imagine Bob trying to be a stay-at-home dad. I think it tells a very family story, but it suffers from the same problems I spoke about new Pixar being too soft.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie, but it's like, compared to Brad Bird's previous Pixar work and Brad Bird's animation work, like, The Iron Giant is a great film. So Brad Bird knows how to work in animation, and he's done two Pixar films beforehand. It's just like, this is the idea you had? I don't, like... And yeah, it's not bad. It's just like, I expected so much more from this. So I didn't actually see this film in the cinema when it came out. I had heard from people who had seen it that this wasn't actually that good. And I was like, well, I don't really want to see it then, because I'll just be disappointed with it. And you said, before we started recording, it has a 93% or something on Rotten Tomatoes.
93%. If I search up Incredibles 2, just in Google, IMDb 7.5, Rotten Tomatoes 93, Metacritic. Also 84, Metacritic 80. So I don't know what that means. Let me just jump into the actual Tomatoes website, though. So it's an 84 audience score, and it's a 93 certified fresh.
Comparatively, the first one has 97%. So only 4% difference. The audience score for The Incredibles, the first one, is 75%.
That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
Like the second Incredibles more. Like, what the fuck is that? That is fucking insane.
Genuinely. This, like, it is a... I will say, I love this. I do love the second film as well. I think it does a good job at a few things, and I think it does a pretty mediocre job at a lot of things.
But yeah, look, I don't dislike this film. I sound like I'll be negative on it when I'm not. But yeah, the animation, it's like, technically, it's very impressive. Like, the character models, they look really weird. I'm not crazy for thinking that, right? Like, character models look weird.
Yeah, they look like more drawn.
Yeah, like, Bob looks like shit. Like, when he just doesn't look
right. Yeah, and if we're getting into the negatives that we have with the film, I also don't, I feel like somehow the animation got worse. I also think the colors, all the colors of everything is a bit off in this film. Like, it's all in fucking golden hour or something. And, like, there's been, like, a filter put over the top of it. And also, the horror elements of the villain. That was such a weird choice for me. I do love the fact that Bob Odenkirk basically just plays, like, Better Call Saul.
I love Bob Odenkirk. I think Bob Odenkirk's great. And he always just randomly, occasionally he'll just randomly show up in things. And I'm just like, oh, he's just here. Yeah, I really like that he was in this. His sister, though, I thought was a very, very underdeveloped character. Especially when, spoiler alert, they reveal she's the villain. It's like, oh, that's not. She just does not have, like, the gravitas that Syndrome has. Like, Syndrome as a villain is just got... He just oozes, like, charisma and character. And Evelyn just, like, doesn't have that. It's like, it's fine to do a female villain, but you do need to, like, develop a villain. I kind of would have preferred if it was both Evelyn and Bob Odenkirk and her... Bob Odenkirk's character and her character as the villain. I think that would have worked a lot
nicer. No, just real Bob Odenkirk.
I think that could have worked a lot nicer because it could have been like Hot Fuzz, how it gets revealed in Hot Fuzz that there's like a ton of people doing the killings. Yeah.
The NWA.
Yeah, but no, I think that would work because you could get some really interesting moments where it's like, oh, how did, like, she's running, like, the screen slaver is, like, running away, and then she bursts into another room, and she's like, how did they get that far already? And, I mean, that's just Hot Fuzz. I'm just pitching Hot Fuzz again. But, get some creative ideas.
Make it Hot Fuzz. Make it Hot Fuzz, though. Like, I don't know. I just, like, to get, I'm just going to say my piece in one long chunk. I think when it comes to my negatives, so picture this as a pros and cons list. But when you look at my negatives, I think I don't care for the entire villain and villain arc. I think that the animation is off. Everything to do with the visual is quite off. It just doesn't feel like how it should. The Pars live in way too nice of a house. They've become now unrelatable as characters. So the whole point was that, they're superheroes, but they're also just like a normal family. And now it definitely doesn't feel like that. Yeah, I feel like the film is just a bit forgettable overall, and it doesn't build up enough off what the foundations that the first film set up. Take example, the end of the first film, the Underminer. You do not understand how excited I was as a child about the concept of getting to watch them fight the Underminer. Like, that was such like a... And then just to have it to be like it kickstarts the film, but it does not matter in like the rest of the film. I felt like the Underminer should have impact as a child. Like looking back on it now, the Underminer is just like a funny way to finish the first film. It's like a funny name, but there are positives I have to the film. The score's still great. It's still like everything that was good about the first, not everything that was good, but like, again, it's nice to have a second Incredibles film. You get to like same uniforms, you get a bit more Edna mode, more character, more time with the characters that you love. But I don't rate this film like higher than a 7.
Yeah, I sort of echo a lot of those sentiments. It just doesn't work as well. It sort of feels the writing just doesn't work. It doesn't have anything.
Now, if this was just a random superhero film from if this was just like a superhero film that was made by like Illumination or something, I reckon it'd be fine. But I think because of the foundations that Incredibles set, again, the second one just falls short.
That's the thing. It seems so much worse than it is purely because it's compared to the original film. It just doesn't have... It just like, yeah, I mean... And look, the voice acting, Samuel L. Jackson, he's still great. I still like Craig T. Nelson, Holly Hunter, like all the voice cast, they're all still good, you know, but it just doesn't, it's just disappointing. And I just wish I didn't have to say that. I wish I could say, no, this is a great film, you know, it's not as good as the first one because, you know, I was never expecting it to be, but I would have liked a film that at least rival first film. But unfortunately, it doesn't. And it just, even the action sequences aren't as nice. They don't work as well. It feels more meandering. It feels less, yeah, tightly written and scripted. It just is a unfortunate disappointment. So I give it a 7 out of 10 as well. I do like it, don't get me wrong, but it's just compared to what the original film is, it doesn't hold a candle. I believe there's been talks of a third one, which I'm not really that excited about now. Like, I'll see it, but I just don't have as much interest in it.
Well, because I think they know that, like, the third... Okay, so that brings up actually a very interesting idea. And it relates into what I was going to talk about, which is these sequels in other Pixar films.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fate for these older Pixar films goes one of three ways. Either it is actually a good sequel, there isn't anything built upon it, you just get an okay second movie and it works well. For example, Monsters University. Again, not as such a drastic time difference, but still. You've got the Cars, which is the sequel, underperforms, isn't as good. So they make a third legacy film about a main character hanging up the boots of some kind. Then you've got the last option, which is that it is a bad sequel. You are second with a tarnished legacy, but you do nothing about it. And I think Incredibles, for me personally, it was either going to be a bad sequel or it has to go the Cars route. And if they're coming out with a third film, I would be very interested to see it.
I think what they could do is do a film where the characters are older. Like, Dash is like a teenager, Violet's grown up and she's an adult. She's in
college, yeah.
She's in college, yeah. Mr. Incredible and Elastigirl, they're like sort of retired, or they're basically, you know, there is the possibility for them to have something really interesting with the third one if they make it. But I just don't know what they can do. Well, see, the thing is, I feel like it is very likely they'll make a third one, because the second one made like $1.2 billion.
Oh, yeah, no, there's money.
So there's clearly some kind of money in them making another one, you know. So I think it is very, very plausible they make a third one at some point in the future, because there's money in it. But if they do make a third one, I won't be as interested. I'll see it, but the desire for a third one is kind of gone. But yeah, that's I think pretty much it, unless there's anything else you want to say, Harry.
Yeah, I think the first one sets up such grounds for such a great film, and the second one falls short. Yeah. And I think in almost every aspect that made the first one great, I think if anything, it says the disappointment that is the second one, just it speaks to how great the first one is. And I think anyone, whether you're not, you're a fan of animation, or you're like, I don't want to watch a kid's film, or go back and watch Monsters, Inc. No, go watch, watch Monsters, Inc., but go back and watch The Incredibles.
And that's it, yeah. Incredibles 2 isn't bad. It's just disappointing because of how good that first film is. But yeah, that's pretty much it, really. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. My voice is still fine, I think. And then, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this one. And then the next planned episodes are going to be hopefully, if everything works out, going to be sort of a big franchise retrospective. Because Harry hasn't actually seen these films. So I think there's a lot of interesting material. Because I'm looking forward to, because I've only seen some of these films. And Harry's seen none of them, so we're going to go in with sort of very different perspectives. And I'm looking forward to it, though. So that's hopefully going to be, that's the next 2 weeks. But yeah, thank you, Harry, again, for joining me for this week.
Oh, you know I love to be here.
Thank you all for listening to this week's episode, and I'll see you all in the next one. Goodbye.